Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Good morning. Welcome back to Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. It's great to be here. 844-707-5533. So you can put your call in the queue. Of course, this is our time for our Ag Report segment. So we are going to go to our Ag reporter, Craig Haugert. I'm going to do that here in a little bit. But in the meantime, let's just take a quick look and see where we are so far this morning on the markets. And right now, the Dow is in negative territory. Remember, I said it was looking like it was going to open significantly positive. I said it's going to be very, very difficult for it to hold that positive momentum. And sure enough, here we are right now, about a half an hour after it's open, and it just turned negative. So it's down slightly. NASDAQ and S&P very much in positive territory. The NASDAQ's up about 0.2%. The S&P up about 0.5%. So we'll watch the Dow, but look, the Dow, if the Dow finishes in positive territory, it would be extremely difficult for it to do that because of Boeing. Boeing's probably, I don't know what Boeing stock is doing right now, but I got to believe it's getting beaten up a little bit based on some of the news that I talked about in the last hour and what is happening, you know, what's happening with Boeing. It is down. You know, it took a pretty big drop here at the open this morning, and I don't see any real recovery as a possibility for that. So that's the Dow's probably going to just hang in there barely. Of course, everybody is waiting for the weekend. There's not going to be a lot happening tomorrow either. You can count on it. It's not going to be a lot of volume. There's going to be a few little earnings things and some economic data coming out that could impact that. We did get GDP, the final look for first quarter GDP, which happened to stay at 3.1%. That is likely the last time we're going to see a three handle in 2019 on GDP growth. So we'll see, though. It's all, everything, it would appear as though our entire economy almost is hinged on this weekend. And we've got so we're not going to know anything until Monday, really anything of any verifiable substance until this weekend. I mean, until Monday. So Monday and Tuesday, we're going to be deciphering all the news coming out of Japan from the G20 meeting, and we'll see what happens. We're going to have news coming out of India and U.S., news coming out of Australia, the lower part of the Pacific Rim. We're going to hear some news coming out of Japan about trade. And, of course, China and the U.S. Saturday, President Trump and President Xi sitting down. But I think that's going to be more of a truce than it is about trade, because I don't think we get anywhere on trade until we get a truce, because all the other garbage has to stop so that we can get to the heart of the matter, and that is trade. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens. There's a lot riding on this, not to mention the end of the second quarter data that is going to be coming out on Friday. I told you a couple times this week that if you are a partner, you don't want to miss the next conference call, because the next conference call is going to be critically important. And, you know, because we probably are going to change our strategy, and there's two different scenarios I'm looking at, three, counting just leave everything where it is, but two different scenarios. And until everything gets deciphered and we kind of see and get a feeling for what is going on and whether we're losing uncertainty or we're gaining more uncertainty, we're not really sure, but I sure have been working hard on it, and we'll know more about that probably by the end of next week. All right, let me go to Craig Haugert, our ag reporter. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, Dan. How are you this morning,
Craig? I'm doing well. How about you?
You know, way better than I deserve, actually. Life's pretty good.
Good.
It was interesting just hearing you talk about, kind of the lack of news going into the weekend and all the things that are going to be hitting the market, stock market next weekend. In the grain world, I think today and tomorrow are going to be some pretty interesting days. So today we'll get the quarterly stocks report for hogs and pigs, and then tomorrow is the Planet Acres report, and that's going to be been widely anticipated with the crops struggling to get them planted this year. That could be a real big report for the ag world tomorrow.
And tomorrow, is that going to be pretty much it? I mean,
that'll be it until we. That should be it until we get the final numbers next January.
Okay. Yeah.
In the June 10th report, the USDA took a shot at the corn plantings, and they put them in at 89.9 million acres. Traders heading into tomorrow's report are actually looking for that number to come out probably in that 86 to 87 million acre range, Dan. Mm-hmm. And on soybeans, they didn't touch them in the June report that we had here on June 10th. The anticipation is we'll probably come in at about an 84.3. A year ago, we had 89.2 million planted. So a pretty big reduction from last year on beans and corn both.
Mm. Wow. I saw some farm reports, of course, talking about some of the legislation that is coming out by the Farm Bureau, and they were talking about those things and how that's going to impact. And apparently, cattle is up. Head of cattle up, something like 100,000, if I'm not mistaken. I read it
early this morning. August feeder cattle were up a limit yesterday. That's $4.50 per hundredweight, kind of based on some of that news. Mm. And they're trading a little bit stronger this morning as well. So a lot of interesting things going on. Hogs have struggled lately, and so you know, it's hopeful that the quarterly hog and pig report out today may give that a little bit of energy to move that market higher as well.
Mm. So how about wheat? Everything?
Wheat's kind of on fire again today. It's been that's really probably turned into the most current weather market. We got some major weather problems in Europe, hot and dry weather, and real concern that that's going to cut into yields there. And so we were up pretty sharply yesterday on wheat and trading 9 cents higher again today. Tomorrow we'll get spring wheat acres report, and the average trade guess is that we'll have planted probably 12.6 million acres of spring wheat here in the United States this year. A year ago that was 13.2 million. We did see the numbers out of Canada yesterday, and they showed the Canadian farmers planted 24.6 million acres of wheat this current year. And that's pretty much in line with where they were a year ago. I think a year ago they were 24.7 million. So Canadian acres are holding in there. We'll expect spring wheat acres to be down in this country. But probably the big story is weather concerns in Europe and what that's doing to that crop.
Mm. So, you know, I'm seeing more wheat here than I've seen in a very, very long time. I was, again, yesterday, the third time in less than a week, up driving up through Lancaster, and so much wheat. Well, it's all being harvested now. Spring wheat, they're all cutting. But boy, so much wheat compared to what is usually corn. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's good to hear. Actually, I in Ohio where I'm currently at, it's kind of a different scenario. We saw a lot of wheat actually get sprayed down this year. It didn't come through the winter very well. We actually had our first new crop spring wheat come into one of our elevators this morning, so quality was looking good. Quality concerns in the Eastern Corn Belt have been a big situation as well. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that first load that I saw is indicative of the way it's going to be, because there's a problem when it's as wet as it has been that you get vomitoxin issues in the wheat, and then that makes it so you can't use it for milling. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. But so far, the initial loads we're seeing, that's not a concern, so the wheat should be good for milling quality, too. So hopefully that continues as we move into harvest here and throughout the wheat belt.
Craig, I sure appreciate you and you being with us and a part of our ministry. It has been such a blessing to so many people. I hear from so many as I travel about, talk to so many people, and they appreciate you so much, and we're grateful. We appreciate you, too. I hope you have a great day. Thank you, Craig, for all you do. We appreciate you.
You bet. Appreciate you too, Dan. Thanks
all right.
A lot, Craig.
God bless. All right. Bye-bye. That was our ag reporter, Craig Haggart. We'll be back on tomorrow. We'll be back. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. And we are going to get to your calls. Let me go to Jen. Jen's calling us from Oklahoma. Hey, Jen.
Hello, Dan. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well. Thank you.
I have three questions for you, if that's
okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one is, I'm a military member, and I have access to TSP, and I was curious which fund from the TSP is a better fit for someone like in their 40s who does not have risk aversion.
Okay. And you're going to stay for how many more years, do you think, Jen?
I have about 8 more years left.
Okay. So I would want to see you primarily, the bulk of your funds and your contributions, into the C, as in Charlie,
mm-hmm.
and the S fund. I think that they would be the bulk. I would probably have 40% or 60% going into the C fund, 30% going into the S fund, and 10% going into the I fund, and make that 50% into the C fund and another 10% in the G fund.
Okay.
And I don't foresee or see any reason why, if you're contributing on a regular basis, which obviously you are, that you would make any changes.
Okay.
I think you could do that and almost forget about it for the next 10 years.
Okay. Perfect.
Yep.
All righty. And then my second question is there a way to reinvest dividends without getting hit with taxes? Because I know that when you take a dividend, the IRS considers it to be income, and they want to obviously tax that, even though you don't ever get your hands on it if you reinvest it back into the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now you're not talking about an IRA account anymore, right?
No. Now we're moving on to just regular
investment stock. Account. Yeah.
Yes, regular investment, yes.
So no, there isn't, because once that is distributed, what you do with it is another story. So you're going to get a 1099 from the brokerage, every year, and it's going to show the dividend, any interest that you've received, and any dividends that you've received, and received meaning that stock has paid out. Okay. Of course, you don't pay any tax on gains until you actually sell the stock, but this is different. This is generating income now.
Right. Okay. All right, because I thought I had read somewhere that it can be reinvested in as a, if you receive stocks as your dividend, you just reinvest those stocks back into the company, but I guess I was wrong.
No, so if you have, I'm assuming that you don't have any stocks that will issue stock as a dividend.
Correct.
So it's it's kind of irrelevant, because it wouldn't work for the kind of thing that, kind of account that you have. But yes, if you're being issued stock, then that's going to show up differently on that 1099, and it wouldn't be taxable.
Okay. All righty. And then finally, you're so patient. Thank you. and then finally, I have a friend of mine who's younger, and much, much younger, and they were interested in fractional investments.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they were interested in that is because they don't have the money to buy a full share. Would you recommend that they go ahead and get into fractional shares so that they kind of get their foot in the door, or just save up the money and buy a full share?
No, I would want them to buy a full share. I wouldn't do that. I would rather them, and I would say this to you, what they want to do is have a Robinhood account. I don't know if you've ever heard me say that, but so they would have an account at Robinhood where they're not paying any fees. So they're not paying $4.95 to play a trade, you know, place a trade. So if they want to spend, you know, $15 for a share of Wendy's hamburgers, they're not going to pay, you know, end up paying $20 for the share by the time they get the $4.95 fee. So I think that if you are investing in that way, that, you know, that would be a better thing to do.
Okay.
You know, it's just, I think it makes more sense. It makes it easier from a transferable perspective. You know, you save that money. If you put $3 into your Robinhood account, you know, a week, then in 5 weeks, just buy a share, a whole share. I think it's better.
Okay. So what are your thoughts then on buying a share in the same industry, but at just a lower price?
Well, it depends on the company. I mean, it's too hard to say. So, you know, I don't like penny stocks. I don't like stocks that are, you know, if a stock is really cheap to buy, there's usually a reason for it. And the cheaper it is, the far more riskier it ends up being. And the cheaper it is, oftentimes it's controlled by a very small group. And that's not a good thing either. So you really have to be careful. I mean, I wouldn't want to make a general statement about that because you really can't. If ConocoPhillips gets cheaper and you buy it, that's different. But, you know, the cheaper the company, the more riskier it is. And you oftentimes are buying companies that have no place to go but down because they are so risky. And they end up being a penny stock and could stay there for years and years and years.
Well, I was kind of thinking more along the lines of saying industry, like off of your list.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But as long as they're on the buy list, I don't have a problem with that. So, you know, if you're a young person and you're looking for technology stock and one of the technology stocks is $40 and one of those tech stocks are, $13, yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Okay, perfect. All right. Yep. Well, Dan, thank you so much for your patience and
you're welcome.
Your mentorship. And I just hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Jen. And we appreciate your service, all of us listening. We thank you so much for that. God bless you and stay safe.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Chris in Texas. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Good.
My sister Susan and brother-in-law Randy said hi.
Oh, jeez. How about
it? I've got a question for you.
Sure.
Your comments on it. You know, if you don't believe in investing so much, and so what little money you have, you just maybe leave at the bank and take whatever interest they pay. You know, it's kind of likened to the biblical story about the workers and each of them had so many talents.
Yes.
How do you feel about that if you just don't really trust anybody?
Man, I don't really have a problem with it, Chris. I mean, look, there's a lot of people I talk to that just say, look, I just want to put it in a CD. I'm not going to make anything. You know, I'm going to make something, but you know what I mean. I'm not making much, but at least if I put my $1,000 in there, then, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, I know I still have $1,000 in there plus a little interest. Look, there's a lot of people that are not, you know, they're very, very risk adverse and would rather give up the opportunity to make higher returns for the sake of safety. And I don't, you know, I'd never argue anybody on that. You know, that's a personal thing, and I, you know, I know a lot of people that have done that over the years.
Let's say you had a little water cash that you, it's like going to Vegas. You wouldn't mind losing it, okay?
Yeah, but you, yeah.
But you would put it in something that somebody highly recommended,
right,
and just put it in there and let it grow and let it do whatever it would do. I guess probably you'd need to become a partner of yours to get that kind of information. But, you know, if you just took a little wad of cash and put it somewhere that you would recommend would be safe and,
yeah,
and biblical-based, you know, and then you could just watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great thing to do. I have people call me all the time with very risky stocks, and they say, look, I don't care if I lose this. It's not going to break me. It's not going to be the end of the world. I don't want to lose it, but if I lose it, it's, you know, it's not going to have a devastating impact on me. Do you think I should, what do you think about this particular stock? I'm going to put it in there and hope for the best. That's fine. You know, as long as you have the attitude and understanding that, hey, if it goes down, it goes down, and there, or if it goes out of business, it goes out of business, and I'm, you know, I'm stuck holding the bag, that's fine. But, you know, I don't think there's anything, you know, wrong with that. If it's something that's on my list, chances are, if you, no matter what happens, if it goes down, if you hold on to it long enough, you're going to do okay, because it's just not the kinds of companies that are prone to going out of business. Not to say they couldn't, but not likely to. So, you know, I think that's just a personal risk assessment that everybody has to do. But there's also a lot of good companies out there, and I would tell people that have some money and they want to try to make some money, then I would rather see you, you know, I know it's a very expensive stock, but put it in a company that is solid, you know, put it in Caterpillar. Yeah, it's, you know, whatever, I don't even know what it is, $130, $40, $50 a share. That's a lot of money, but you know what? It's just going to plug along. I mean, it's never, you're going to make, in the end, at the end of 10 years, you're going to make more than you would have made in any CD or any bank. You may have some bad months, maybe even a couple bad years, but in the long run, you're going to do fine.
Sure. Appreciate you talking.
All right, Chris.
God bless you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it. God bless you. 844-707-5533. We'll be right back. So Ian's got a little story from it, where I thought was interesting. So is it Nike, Ian?
Yeah, so it's a Nike company. They recently pulled a line of shoes from a couple of stores in China due to a design company over there posting a photo on Instagram of them supporting the protests in Hong Kong concerning the extradition bill.
Okay, so they're pulling their support. Are they pulling out of China?
No, they're not pulling out of China completely. They just pulled a line of shoes from a design company, which posted the photo. And this design company was creating a new line of shoes for Nike, but they sent Nike sent over a urgent warning to a specific company in China, saying that they need to pull away from this line of shoes. And then other Chinese companies started following suit as they kind of caught wind of the photo that was posted.
Oh, wow. How about it? Boy, as if China doesn't have enough problems. Good stuff. Thank you, Ian. That's Ian Patrick. Of course, he produces this show. He also does news for us and so many other things. So I appreciate that. Thanks, Ian. So, you know, we're starting to see so much of this. And I know that Nike, for instance, has already shifted a major chain of theirs to Vietnam. So they're making their fleece. So when you buy a fleece from Nike, you're probably going to see made in Vietnam instead of made in China. They just shifted it over there. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. Problem is, Vietnam's running out of workers. you know, they're trying to train up as many people as they can, so we'll see how that goes. All right. 844-707-5533. Let me go to David from North Carolina. Hey, David.
Hello, Dan. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you. I want to thank you for extremely hard work that you must do to put on your program. And for those people that aren't partners, just the education from listening to you and observing your mind work on the program daily is worth the fee,
even if
I don't make any money off of your recommendations. And all the recommendations you give are good. So
yeah, thank you.
You're a treasure.
Thank you, David. That's an encouragement. Yeah. Thank you so much. I hope it encourages some other folks too. Thank you.
Yesterday, a lady called in, and she and you had a discussion with her about C20.
Yes.
And I avoided trying to call you up because I went to the Vanguard website and tried to get some information on it, but it wasn't clear whether the principal on that Vanguard, I think it's it's C20.
Yeah, C20. Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
The principal is secure. You did mention in your website that it had some risk of interest on the downside, but you did not specifically say it had risk of principal loss on the downside. Could you clarify that, please?
Yes. Anytime I mention on any of those cash positions, I call them that, when I say some volatility or risk, I'm never talking about income. I'm always talking about principal. So if I say volatility, that means that your principal could go down. Your principal will go down. It will go up. There is going to be some volatility. Now, having said that, it trades, in other words, you know, it trades up and down in a very, very, very narrow range, meaning that it could go down 10 cents, it could go up 10 cents, it could go down 3 cents, it could go, up 3 cents. It's very narrow. It's not going to go down $4 and go up $4. It's not going to do that. It trades in a very, very tight, narrow range. So there's always going, so I point out, as I say on the description there, that, you know, it has some volatility. So it's not like a money market account where you can put $1,000 in and you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that on September 3rd, you're going to still have that money exactly as you put it in with a little bit of interest. It's not like that. It is going to move a little bit with the market. And of course, so will the income. The income will as well. These are government, U.S. government treasuries. That's what these basically are. They're treasury. They're bonds that are pegged on a very short-term basis. So they trade in a narrow range, but yes, no, there is nothing on that whole list. There's nothing on there that isn't subject to some of the principal potentially being lost. Now, I use myself as an example. So for years, that's been my parking place for the cash in my IRA account. I don't think I could ever lose money on that fund at this point. It would be almost impossible because I've had it for so long and the income's been reinvested. We would have to be going into some sort of really deep depression for me to lose money, you know, on that. So, you know, it gets to the point where you're earning, you know, there was a point last year it was 2.5%. But, you know, you're going to earn 1% and, you know, 2%, and it's going to vary, and that's going to build up and grow, and that's going to always help that account out. But there's always going to be that risk. Who knows what could happen, even with treasury bills and the debt to the nation. All those things would impact that.
Well, that was one of my questions too. If it's like a utility and the fluctuation is moderate on the upside and the downside, it fluctuates in a narrow range, I'm fine with that. But also, if the outlook for that fund was of a stable nature over 3 to 5 years from now, looking forward, I would have made enough off of it to act as a cushion for the downside fluctuations. Is that a good way to look at it?
Well, yeah, that's why I say on my account, I've made so much that the cushion is so great that it is never, I'm not saying it won't, but it has never in the last couple of years fluctuated so much on the downside that it got below my cushion. I mean,
Is 2 or 3 years enough time to establish that cushion without a major?
Yeah, I think 2 years is. I think 2 years is. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's probably enough, because, again, it is very tight. So it's a lot tighter range than a utility even, you know. So utilities are far more likely to have a big swing up or down. I mean, I've seen some of my utilities over the last 3 years be up as high as 18%, which is so unusual. You know, I always tell people, don't count on that, because that's just, you know, but lately, you know, and I say lately in the last 3 years, we've seen some pretty big swings on the upside for utilities and some on the downside, but still pretty tight. But, you know, this would be a lot tighter than that.
Is the liquidity good? Can I?
Liquidity's good. I mean, you sell it today and you get your money, you know, right away. Yeah, there's
so
no.
It would be, our money right now is in TIAA. They were giving more than anyone else. I think it was like 0.7 or 0.67, which compared to everybody else is pretty good.
Now, is it TIAA stable value?
GIAA?
No. Is it TIAA Crefs stable value fund that you're using?
I don't know if it's called a stable value. It's just like a checking. Is that the one I should be in?
Well,
if
you are in that, that's guaranteed. So that's different than this. So if you did say TIAA Cref, didn't you? TIAA?
I said TIAA, but I don't know what the fund is, the specific name of the account is.
Yeah, so they have a stable value fund, it's called. And it is the best stable value fund in the country, in the sense that it's the only one I know of. If there's one out there, I'd be surprised. I think it's the only one out there that's guaranteed. So they guarantee the interest and the principal. You can ask them that. You should call them and ask them that. So
rate on it? Is it high?
It's not high. No, the rate's not high. It's, you know, in the 2% range.
Oh, well, yeah. That's twice what I'm getting now. I better check into that.
I mean, ask them about that if you're eligible for that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I don't want to take time away from any of the other callers. I appreciate you. I love you. I love the work you do. And
thanks
for introducing us to Preborn.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
We give regularly to it.
That's great.
So, anyway.
David, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys so much. And thank you for your encouragement. Hopefully it's encouraged others. God bless. 844-707-5533. And, you know, folks, somebody called me last week and said, I can't believe you do this for whatever amount, whether you have an $85, $124 a year partnership. Some people think it's a month, that's a year. And somebody called and said, I was paying $180 a year. Somebody called and said they were paying $325 a month. And they stopped that. So what a blessing, man. Anyway, we'll be back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Kent. Kent's calling us from Texas. Hey, Kent. Kent? All right, we don't have Kent. I'll put him on hold. All right. Let me go to Jonathan from Arkansas. Hey, Jonathan.
Morning, Dan.
Good morning.
I had a question about irrevocable trust. I heard you kind of broadly talk about them maybe 2 weeks ago. What are, I guess, the pros, the cons, those kind of specific situations when you think that an irrevocable trust would be appropriate? And what does it actually protect when you do use those?
So irrevocable trusts are not used very often anymore. They used to be used quite often back in the 80s and 90s. Not so much anymore. There's too many other instruments out there. But I as someone who owned a trust company for 22 years and ran and managed a lot of money, the last trust I did was in 1996, was the last trust I did. And I wouldn't have done it then had it not been a very unique situation, because it was after the tax laws changed and didn't make them as advantageous. So the an irrevocable trust is, first of all, it is just that. It is irrevocable, cannot be changed under any circumstances. And one of the circumstances that it cannot be changed for is to use, you know, for a nursing home to confiscate one's money. Now, they still can put pressure on a person to spend down, because that money is still spendable account, unless that irrevocable trust is in an instrument that they don't have access to. So they don't have it's not an instrument that they use to supplement their income in any way, shape, or form. It is just holding assets, and those assets aren't really used for generating income. So they don't have any major tax savings kinds of issues, because what has happened, that a normal living trust now does the same thing. Now, we don't have a need today for estate tax savings like we did in the 80s and 90s. So they oftentimes don't, not that they don't work, it'll never hurt you, would never hurt you to have either a living trust. It would hurt you, it could hurt you to have an irrevocable trust because of the lack of access to those assets and funds. And oftentimes what I found, and I'm going back to now the 80s and 90s, early 90s, but what I found is there were so many people that had an irrevocable trust that it actually hurt, because they needed the access or could have used the access to some of those assets in a way that they weren't able to do. A living trust, you always have access to the money and it can be changed anytime. But irrevocable trust, oftentimes what you find out is people think, well, I'm going to do an irrevocable trust because I'm going to set this money aside so that nobody can get it or touch it or do anything with it. And, you know, it'll be there for my heirs, say, or something to that effect. And they do that when they're 50. And here they are now, 75 or 80, still in good health, and realize that, oh, my word, you know, I sure could use that money or those assets, and can't get to it, and it becomes very, very difficult. So, you know, it is not something, it would have to be a very unique situation for us, for me to recommend that. But I suppose there are still very high, now I was dealing with very high net worth individuals, and they had family trusts that were irrevocable from, I had one that was from 1902 that was made into an irrevocable trust in 1916. So, but it was a family, it was a bloodline trust, it was a very complicated trust, it was a lot of money. But I would have to know a lot about somebody's circumstances before I could really point out the benefits and the downsides. I don't know in your case what the downside would be, because I don't know enough about your situation. And I can't tell you what the upside would be, because there may be something else that would have a far greater upside that were to outweigh a little bit of the downside. And that is generally the case when you're looking at those things. But I don't know your circumstances. You might have just inherited, $600 million and, have seven heirs that you want to try to protect. I mean, so there's it really depends. Tax law today with the estate tax really has changed so dramatically that most people don't even need a living trust anymore because of estate tax, the way it is established now. The living trust is always a good thing to have in the sense that it can't ever hurt you, and it makes settling your estate very, very, very easy, whether it's large or small. But a lot of people get talked into them based on old tax law rhetoric that a firm might talk somebody into doing it when it really doesn't apply to them at all. And they think that their children or their heirs are going to save all this tax money. One of the common mistakes that people make today is they have a trust, because a living trust, to save all the taxes on their IRA accounts. Well, and because most of people's wealth is in an IRA account, unfortunately, you can't put an IRA account in a trust. Doesn't apply. So they think they're going to save all this money, and their heirs find out something very different. So it is really just not something you see a whole lot unless you're in a very unique situation.
Okay, thanks, Dan. That helps a whole lot.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, Jonathan. 844-707-5533. Let me go to William. William's calling us in Tennessee. Hey, William.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I had a question. What is a Dutch auction, and why do companies do it?
Do you know a company doing that now?
Yeah, MA39.
That's a very different situation, but yeah. So they do it generally to try to bring value and relief in some cases to debt that they have, which is not the case for MA39, debt that they have. And what they do is it is redistributing debt in a way that what is used to redistribute the debt ends up being a gain to their valuation, increasing their valuation. So it, obviously it is a public thing. It's for public structured investments, things that are publicly traded. And it is an offering at auction. And it's not an auction as if a kind of auction where there might be 30 companies there bidding on certain things. It's not that kind of auction, but it's a public offering auction on structured debt, and they auction that debt off at the highest price for the debt, and then the person that buys it is participating in the equity of the interest rate that the company is paying for that debt. So if you sell debt, you still have to pay the interest. And now the company that bought that debt gets to participate in some of that interest rate that is being received, and the company gets to use the auction income and the expansion of the debt as an equity, so it helps their bottom line, but it reduces the amount of benefit that they receive from it. I don't know, I'm trying to put it simply. You can't, because it's very complicated. But
what I read was that they want to buy up to 37 million shares.
Yeah, they want to sell. So
they want to sell it.
So they want 37 million shares to be bought up at the auction.
Maximum bid, you know, and the minimum bid, I've seen them, and the maximum bid is where it is right now almost.
Right, right.
So in other words, they're wanting to know if I want to buy more shares?
No, they want to know if you would make your shares available.
Okay, so I'm going to hang with them then.
Yeah, hang with them, definitely, yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you a lot.
All right, you're welcome. We'll see you. Folks, a lot of you got to leave us now. I hope you have a wonderful day. Look, remember, all that we have is his. It's all the Lord's. We will stand before him someday. Let's stand before him and be found a good and faithful steward. And right here at Financial Issues, we want to help you be that good and faithful steward. I hope you have a wonderful day. We're going to have more Financial Issues right after this. We got another hour left. But if you got to leave us, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless.
If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.